Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my name is Ned Bolting. Welcome to The Roadbook, part of the Never Strays Far family of podcasts, in which I'm joined by David Miller, and we never stray far from talking about road racing. That's the theory. This is the recording. You're the audience. I see no reason for any further delay. Let's get this podcast done. Roglic then back at the Madonna di San Luca in Bologna. He won the opening time trial here at the Giro d'Italia. He went on to claim victory overall at the Vuelta. And here he is looking to sign off 2019 in style. He takes the Giro dell'Emilia all on his own. Roglic attacks. No one can answer him. He opens up a huge gap. He looks around. Full time gives up. Boston can do nothing. And Roglic makes it 2 out of 2 in Italy. He takes Trey Valli Valentine. And he is on some form.
Well, Ned, what on earth is going on in Italy?
It's been really, really good, David. I've really enjoyed watching it. I saw a little bit of, the two races you just heard a tiny bit of commentary from there, Giro dell'Emilia and the Tre Valli Varesene. And they've been really good. I've really enjoyed watching the races. We spoke about it, didn't we, with Matt Rendell the other day. But, David, it's kind of lived up to its billing.
Yeah, it has. I mean, these races have always been, they're sort of hidden in the calendar to a certain degree, where a lot of the momentum has gone from the majority of the peloton, but also the fans, if you will. And yet these races exist and they're fantastic races. And for many years, they did really hold a classic status. And although they still are, Milan-Torino, which is happening today, is one of the oldest bike races on the calendar, 1876. So there is a pedigree and a history to the races, and yet they remain, oddly, a little bit unknown.
I love it. We were just talking before we started recording, David, and you were saying with our podcast energy, we're attacking the fag end of 2019 season with an absolutely outrageous vigour, aren't we, when everybody else is beginning to flag. We're just coming into our own.
It's so true, to the degree where I'm just signing up to start watching bike races.
I think that's brilliant.
Oh God, I know the truth is revealed, but it's it's worth it as well, because you do. I mean, the fact is, as we heard from your commentary there, Roglic, this is an affirmation for him. This is something that it goes to show that he won the Vuelta in a very controlled manner, but the way he can then come to these one-day races, highly competitive fought over one-day races, and dominate as he has in these first two, it's a brilliant stamp for authority.
And I'll tell you what, David, I didn't see much of the victory in the Giro dell'Emilia, except the distance that he won on that climb up the Madonna di San Luca. But I did watch in much more detail the Tre Valli race the other day, and it was hilarious. So I don't know if you followed that one or read the reports, but Luis Leon Sanchez did a classic Luis Leon Sanchez attack. Sorry, about 25 kilometres to go, and he built up a lead that was around about a minute, and then a group of really, you know, big hitters started to work together and bring him back, and they got to within about 15 seconds with about 13 kilometers to go, I think, and they were reeling him in, and one of them was inevitably going to win when they got to a roundabout. And there was a bit of crap marshalling, and the TV motorbike that was in front of that second group just went straight on, and they all followed the TV motorbike. Turns out it was the wrong way. So that was the end of that. So that was the end of that move. And they all went back into what remained of the peloton. And then Luis Leon Sanchez suddenly had a 45-second gap with about 10 kilometres to go. And Roglic, with that phenomenally powerful Jumbo-Visma team that they've taken to the Italian races, just played it so cool. He allowed Teo Gegenhardt and Salvatore Puccio, trying to set it up for Gianni Moscon, to do all the work to bring back Luis Leon Sanchez, which they did inside the final 700 metres, I have to say. And then Moscon felt duty-bound to counterattack. Fuglsang marked him, and so Moscon kind of gave up heart with that. And from nowhere, this flash of yellow just appeared. And Roglic just unleashed this phenomenal turn of speed and rode away from everybody in the race. And within the last 300 metres, his margin of victory was absolutely enormous. So you say confirmation of his form. I mean, it's incredible the way he's held his form all the way through the year, from the UAE Tour through to the Giro d'Italia, into the Vuelta, and now here in Italy. He's been, I think in many people's eyes, he's been the rider of 2019, which is saying something, really.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's very much, I do hesitate to say this, but because it has been a great season for him, but it almost serves as a gateway to next year, when I think even bigger things are expected of him. And by finishing off the year like this, it really is showing that, well, there is no limit. And I think that's going to be very exciting for all of us. But before, I just want to go back to something, Ned, because going back to that incident, because it's one of the most cycling things ever. And on one of the main cycling websites, I love this. The headline for the incident was, "Riders left angry and amused after going wrong way in Tre Valli Vercina." And you think, guys, can't you even get just a bit of solidarity? Either be angry or amused. But it's like, this helps nobody. It's like, so it's so good.
And that's why this sport is so good. It's why this sport is so good, David, that you can't help but be amused. I think it's great. I love it. Yeah, so there you go. So anyway, you mentioned it earlier, David, but Milano-Torino, the next one, just got underway. And as things stand, David, well, there's a long way to go to the finish. We will, in a kind of weird podcasty way, bring you the finish a little bit later, but there's a couple of hours of racing still to go. Five guys up the road, including Joey Roscoff and the brilliant Rémi Cavagna. Remember him from the Vuelta, the Frenchman from De Koenig Quickstep. But they'll be reeled in because within the peloton, some big hitters are there. This is a race that finishes, don't forget, up the Superga climb. They go up it twice. It's pan flat until they get to there. Up the Superga climb with about 20 kilometres to go, round in a loop, and then up it again with about 5 kilometres to go. But you've got Jakob Fuglsang, Philippe Gilbert, James Knox, Sergio Higuita, David Godu, Adam Yates, Alejandro Valverde, Mikel Landa, Carlos Betancourt, Egan Bernal, Eddie Dunbar, Ivan Sosa, Warren Barguil, Rafa Majka, to name but a few. And also Mads Pedersen wearing his rainbow bands for the first time.
Yeah, it is a pedigree field. And with that angry and amusing incident a couple of days ago, one of the riders who was showing form was Dan Martin. And he's somebody who is in this race. This is a race that is perfect. It's a perfect finish for him. And it also does mean that it's going to give him the confidence for Lombardia, because to be perfectly frank, I think Dan Martin is looking to save his season. Not that he'd ever treat these races as with that sort of attitude, because often he's come to this week of racing and it's been where he's got some of his biggest results, and it's where we first saw he was capable of performing in a classic in Lombardia before he had his win in Liège. But yep. I think this year in particular, this week means more than anything to him.
Gotcha. I just one note of caution to that. I don't think he's in the race. Not in this one,
well,
anyway.
One of the things, but I mean, seeing the races before, and if he's not in it, that goes to show that he has got the condition. Because this is the week that really does kind of dominate his season in many ways.
Yeah. David, since this is our podcast, we can digress, can't we? Entirely to our own agenda. So all I wanted to say is, coming up still in this podcast, we'll bring you the result of Milano-Torino and the last couple of hundred metres. We'll have a little natter about the big transfer news. That's still to come. Plus, I've got an interview with a French rider who has just yesterday raced his last ever race. And we talk about, guess what, astrophysics. So that's all to come. But first off, just a quick word about Chapter 3 and what you're up to there with your brand, David.
Yeah, I wanted to explain a bit as well why you and I started this podcast. It was a vehicle for us to keep talking about bike racing outside of our TV work. But it was also an opportunity for us to not be constrained, let's say, by certain limitations that you often are when you're doing TV, etc. Because obviously, a lot of what you and I do is the majority of our life are our own projects, and mine is Chapter 3. It's the company and brand that I created when I stopped bike racing, and it's become a really wonderful project, although extremely challenging, because I finished my cycling career and started to go down the classic path, if you like, although I thought I was doing it differently. I went to my old partners and asked if they wanted to keep working together but make products for a non-racing world. But I didn't want to use my name, so we came up with the name Chapter 3 because everybody had kept asking, what's the next chapter? And at the time, it felt like the third chapter because my career had been split in two. But actually, what it's turned into over the years, I've realized that creating a brand is a very, very difficult thing to do. But then also behind the brand, it's understanding the business, knowing what's the type of company you need to construct in order to run that business. And then beyond all that, the brand has been growing. And Chapter 3 now has become something that is very much, I've learned, that isn't just about me and my career, post-career. I'm finding that the more I travel around and bump into people, so many people that are going into this next chapter of their lives, and also using cycling, running, sport, and we hear over and over again these days the kind of the concept of well-being and headspace and mental health, which they all essentially come down to the same thing: us being able to spend time to find ourselves, and that's something that we in this modern world we have less and less time to do, and oddly, I found that cycling is what offers that to so many people. It's also running. It can be yoga. It can be meditation. And for me, it's been this Chapter 3 voyage has really taken me to look at things differently. Because when you've been a professional cyclist, like I was for nearly two decades, you get very locked into a place where cycling is just one thing, and it does become a job. I know a lot of people always are quite disappointed when they hear pro cyclists say, "Well, it's my job," because I couldn't really empathize with that, because I thought, well, you don't understand. I didn't actually realize that for them cycling was something completely different, that it was an escape, that it offered them a third space outside of their family life and their work life, which would take up the majority of the time, and the only time they could get time on their own or with their friends was when they were cycling. And so I'm finding that Chapter 3 now is something I really want to take the brand down that direction, where we become the company that can, the business, the brands that can create the products that can deliver the and satisfy the needs for what you want to do, and be that in any type of cycling. Now, I'd say we're still in the early days of that, but at the moment, this podcast, and it will go off in two different ways, with yours, with the road book, which is what this podcast is very, very much the racing side of things, and obviously never strays too far, might go into astrophysics, etc. But in a few weeks, I'd like to start the second series of podcasts under the Never Strays Far bracket, a channel, if you like, called The Next Chapter, where I start to interview race commentary. I want to start doing these interviews with people who have been guiding me over the last few years, because I was going to a lot of people asking for their advice, and often when you ask for advice, you end up learning about that person's story and how they built their company, business, brand, or just their opinions on sport, etc. I thought, well, actually, these are really great conversations that I think I'd like to share. And so I'm starting to go back to different people and ask them if they'd do it again, but we'll record it. And so far, I've spoken to Paul Smith, Phil Gilbert, who's the head of design at IBM, and have a few more lined up. So they're people that you wouldn't necessarily think are from the cycling world or within our world, and yet there's so much that ties us together, and primarily cycling and this idea of the kind of what cycling is to them. So yeah, so that's where I'm with Chapter 3. It's building this brand that I hope will grow with me and grow with the sport and with how we're all seeing it these days. And I hope that this podcast will allow us to do our different directions, just as I do with Chapter 3, like you're doing with this one and the road book. And I think if you, coming from that's my Chapter 3 side of things, and I think it'd be interesting for people to hear from your side what the road book side of things is.
Well, I mean, hopefully, although you can never underestimate how difficult it is to get the message out, because we've been around for a year now, but the road book has made its mark in, you know, record time, really, from a standing start on the cycling world a little bit. And I'm still enormous. In fact, I'm probably more proud of it this time around than I was last year when we brought out our first ever edition. David, we're just putting the finishing touches to the 2019 roadbook. It's going to have to go to press very, very quickly. We've got the Guangxi, which is the last World Tour race. Then we hit print, and it's printed in the United Kingdom on high quality paper. And it's a couple of weeks later, it exists physically, and it is 900 pages long, and it's going to be an absolute beauty. So we're collecting all the writing that's come in, a fantastic profile of Julien Alaphilippe, his background written by Philippe Auclair. Paul Fournel has written a poem for us. We've got a piece breaking down the data of Mathieu van der Poel's win in Amstel Gold by Michael Hutchinson. We have got this, that, and the other. Matt Rendell has written a wonderful piece about Colombia and Egan Bernal's victory and how that means. But we've also had contributions from Richard Carapaz, from Philippe Gilbert, and from Annemiek van Vleuten, amongst others. Orla Chenery as well has written for us about the two director sportives, Ina Teutenberg and Giorgia Bronzini, who are breaking down barriers in the women's peloton. Anyway, so that's it. I'm really proud of it. And if you go onto our website, there are ways at the moment of ordering the 2018 edition, which still exists, the first one ever, at a reduced rate now, or you can bundle it all up and pre-order the 2019 book. So go to theroadbook.co.uk.
We had this event last week here in Girona it was a chapter 3 event, and some of our guests, part of what they received was a copy of the roadbook.
Oh yeah, we sent some out, didn't we?
And it went down a storm because they didn't realize that kind of the absolute, it's to describe to people as a tome, and within it you have every single big race of the year in there, beautifully graphically represented with the results, all different classifications, the weather on that day, and it turns into this absolute oracle for that season. And anybody who's, well, let's say it's a very English audience, and a particular type of English audience that would understand Wisden, which was this book that still exists. That is, how many years has Wisden been going for, Ned?
About 140, I think, off the top of my head. I may not be around to see that era of the road book. Yeah.
And the Wisden is the Bible of cricket. It's what everyone can go back to 80 years, 20 years, 2 years, 140 years, and see what was going on in that season of cricket. And that we don't really have in cycling. We have all the online databases, but there's no real coherence to them. There's certainly no solidity or longevity to it. So I would recommend to anybody that having the copy, and it's one of those things where you'd want to eventually have your shelf full of them, because they are beautiful things. And it's like
to reinforce your shelves.
You would have to reinforce your shelves.
Well, thank you, David. I mean, just to stress, it's not just the big races. Every single tiny race is represented as well, and across the women's and the men's calendar, etc., etc. Anyway, listen, I'm very proud of it, but there we go. David.
Yes.
How about some transfer news? Should we do a bit of transfer news?
I would love some transfer news, because I don't know any of the transfer news, Ned.
All right, let's have a bit of music, and then we'll pick it up again. Okay, a whole bunch of transfers, David, are happening for 2020, and I think they're really interesting. There are a bunch more than this, but I've just picked out some really interesting names that I'm going to fling at you, right? And just you can either say, "Oh, that's an odd one," or "Yeah, that makes total sense." All right? Okay.
Yep.
Vincenzo and Antonio Nibali are moving to Trek Segafredo.
This does make sense. I find it quite surprising. It's probably got a lot to do with they got the Swiss Italian boss, haven't they? Or is he Italian? But it's seeing Vincenzo Nibali go to an Anglophone team. That's a great move for him, because I think it sets him up for post-career. But it's a very courageous and confident move from Trek Segafredo, because he is in his twilight years. But it's Vincenzo Nibali. You never know. So I'd say it's a gamble for Trek. It's an absolute level up for Vincenzo Nibali.
Yes, indeed. Dan Martin is going to the Israel Cycling Academy, who are going to be World Tour next year, one way or another. So he's going to obviously spearhead their GC ambitions, because he's kind of shared leadership a little bit with Fabio Aru and, of course, Pogacar at UAE, hasn't he? So he's moving on again.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. Israel Cycling Academy has been based around Girona for a while, so it's probably been bumping into people. And obviously, I think he's the type of rider that doesn't really necessarily need a team around him. So yeah, that makes total sense. It's probably the same reasons he went to UAE. He's quite fine just going to a team that satisfies the kind of contractual needs and doesn't need much of a team around him.
Do you know what I think is interesting, though? The team he's left, UAE, have still got Pogacar, and I think that they can probably start slowly giving up on Fabio Aru on the evidence of everything we've seen. But they've got Pogacar, and they have signed the following riders: David de la Cruz, Joe Dombrowski, and Davide Formolo. And that looks to me like a kind of slightly watered-down version of empire building, a little bit like Jumbo-Visma are doing as well. Because those three riders in support of Pogacar, suddenly that becomes pretty serious, I think.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's something we haven't seen from UAE up to date. And perhaps what they were doing let's not forget, they're a new team. You just cherry-pick some big names in order to kind of get some status for the team. And you know not all of them are going to work. And then they've just hit jackpot, and the one that works is the one that probably everybody in cycling wants. So there would be absolutely ridiculous for them not to reinforce and make sure that he's set up for the future.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting that. And another team who, you know, based out in the Middle East with all that money, we've got Rod Ellingworth now, haven't they? They've got Mark Cavendish as well. But in terms of their GC ambitions, Wout Poels and Mikel Landa going to Bahrain. Well, they're going to be Bahrain McLaren, we understand, next year. So that would be just very interesting to see what they're able to do.
Well, I tell you what, the most interesting thing about that is the fact that Rod Ellingworth is now taking over the reins as performance director, if you like. So he's taken the gamble of unshackling himself, perhaps for want of a better term, from the Team Ineos machine and Brailsford, etc., because he was obviously brought up under that system. This is going to be a huge test for him, and he is going in there now as number one, and that does mean he's taking a lot of the know-how and a lot of the things that he brought to Team Sky, Team Ineos, the British team before that. He's now going to be taken to Bahrain McLaren, and I'm very curious to see what happens there.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to chuck just a couple more, and they're slightly more random, less GC-ish at you. Nathan Haas is going to Cofidis. I quite like the sound of that, because I think it kind of guarantees him a place on the Tour de France, doesn't it? And he's been frustrated in that regard the last couple of years.
Yeah, and he's always been a bit of a francophone. I was always surprised that for an Australian, Australian of his generation spoke good French, and perhaps it's been something he's been pining for a while. And to see Cofidis, they're having a big shift next year, and obviously that's Nathan is part of that. An important part of that shift at a cultural level as well.
Yeah, yeah. Guillaume Martin also is going to Cofidis, and finally, let's leave you this one: Magnus Cort is going to EF Education First. And that kind of raised a few eyebrows with me. But the more I think about it, the more I think that could work for both.
Yeah, I'd say he's very much an EF rider, actually. He's kind of got that free spirit. He seems to be a pretty cool guy. He's definitely an interesting bike racer, yet to be totally defined. But yeah, I think EF would be perfect for him.
Yeah. All right, let's bring you up to date. What's happening in Milano-Torino? 43.8 kilometres to go. Those five riders I mentioned are 3 minutes and 27 up the road. Ineos are working on the front for Leonardo. Well, Leonardo Basso is doing the work on the front. They're sharing it with Bora Hansgrohe, who've got one rider, and Movistar, who've been riding very hard all day for Alejandro Valverde, I would imagine, on today's finish. It would suit him down to the ground. But the peloton has things totally under control. Now, David, I think it's time for a bit of astrophysics via the slightly tenuous route of Johan Bagot. If you've been following the sport over the last few years, has been riding he spent 8 years at Cofidis in total, and then the last couple of years he has been riding for Vital Concept. He is the son of Jean-Claude Bagot. I don't know if that name means anything to you, David. You're a good historian of the sport, but it's pretty obscure.
No, unfortunately not.
No?
No, unfortunately not. It does ring a bell, but like literally just more of a little tinkle.
Okay, the tinkle is 1987, he won a stage of the Giro, amongst other things. And Johan has grown up in, even though he's got a name that hails from Normandy, that region of France, he actually grew up in Salon de Provence, which is the home of the Patrouille de France, isn't it? The French Red Arrows. Do you remember we saw that? I think it was the day Edouard Boissenhagen won a couple of years ago into Salon de Provence, and we spent evening watching them circle over the finish line. It was absolutely amazing. Johan, though, his greatest achievement was in 2013. He won a stage of the Tour of Turkey on the big mountain to Selçuk. I say won it. He actually finished second on the day. But the guy who won that stage and then went on to win the overall in 2013, Mustafa Sayar, tested positive and was stripped of his achievements. So the win goes to Johan Bagul. Other than that, though, he's been a loyal domestique for a decade. He has stopped racing now, and he's going on, I should say this because he very patiently did an interview with me and spoke about this at length, and it's very important to him. He has founded, along with some colleagues, a wonderful website and app called Bike and Connect. You can find it, I'm sure, which links up people who are organising rides or races or training camps on an amateur basis with people who want to sign up. So it's primarily, I think, for the French audience, but it's a really good-looking website with all sorts of different avenues for people to get involved and link up and also geolocate their rides so that they can hook up with cycling cafes in the neighbourhood and bike shops if they need mechanical help and all that sort of thing. So Bike and Connect is his commercial venture. But I wanted to speak to him about what else he's got in mind and what has interested him down the years, including astrophysics. Anyway, I caught up with him this morning, actually, just after he finished his last ever bike race.
My last race was yesterday in Belgium.
In the, how do bench. You say it? Banche, yeah.
Yes.
Was it okay?
For me, it was just bench chimé. I stopped in chimé.
DNF. Okay. Well, many congratulations on your career anyway. How does it feel now that you're finished? Must be strange.
Oh, yes, it's strange, but my leg was no good this year, and I'm very happy to stop.
Your team, Vital Concept, they made a tweet about your retirement. They were wishing you luck in your retirement, and they said that you will have your head in the stars. what were they talking about?
Quand il parle d'astronomie.
Oui.
C'est ça? Ah. Oui. Yes, I like this since many time when I was child. I love science and astronomy was, enfin, astrophysics. It's my, I love this. I am fan of Stephen Hawking. I have read all this, book. I have read many books about astrophysics, astronomy, and it's okay, Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking was very, very good because his book are very vulgarized in English. What is the name? Vulgarization.
I think it means popular. Yeah, they're easy for people to understand.
Yes.
So they're not too. Yeah, I mean they're still quite difficult. I have to say, quite difficult. But it's complicated stuff. What do you like most in astrophysics and astronomy? Are you interested in the planets or the stars or maybe the really small stuff like dark matter and stuff like that?
For me, I want to understand all the. I want to understand the universe. For living in this world, I want to understand all.
Yeah.
You understand? And when I read book and always I finish and I say, oh, we don't know, we know never.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
And I finish, I say, you are too small compared to the universe, and we live a very, very small time.
I have one big question for you, Johan.
Yes, okay.
It's the biggest question, maybe. do you believe in God?
Ah, yes. Oh, Yes, it's a good question.
It's a very big one.
Oh, yes. I have reflected, you understand?
Reflected, yeah.
Reflected many, many times. And yeah. For this, I have read all the religion.
Yep.
For try to understand.
Uh-huh.
And I have seen many books too.
Yep.
And my best definition of God.
Yes.
Is in the my sentiment, what I think.
In your feelings, yeah. Your
yes,
think, yeah.
It's the response of Stephen Hawking in the last book.
Okay, what does he say?
In the last book, it's a small question of the big, smaller response of the big question. You see this book, it's the last book of Stephen Hawking.
Yeah,
he speaks about God. He speaks about God and he explains God exists or not exists. And this response is perfect for me. You will read.
So you don't have the answer. You're telling me I have to read the book to find out.
Oh, it's not very long. Maybe two or three pages in the beginning of the read.
Okay, I will find that. That's
but
in
it's
his.
Very long to explain for me, but this world are perfect for me.
Johan, amazing. And when you were, because being a professional cyclist is a very, very hard job. Yeah, the racing is hard, the training is hard, and all those many hours and days on a bike riding. Did you have time to reflect, to think about the universe and about God and about the planets and the stars when you were on your bike?
Yes, I reflect this in the bike.
Yeah.
When you do 5 hours in the bike, we have the time for reflection.
For thinking, yeah. Just one last question, and it's not about astrophysics. It's about it's about cycling. The Tour de France this year was a really big story for France, for French cycling, with Thibaut Pinot and with Julien Alaphilippe. Do you feel like there is more interest now again in the Tour de France? And was it a big change in French cycling this year?
Yes, it was a big chance for the French this year. And Pinot have a big problem. It's very bad because it's very good people.
Yeah.
But I think it's not finished for him. And when the planet was aligné, you understand? Les planètes sont alignées en français.
Sont alignées.
Sont alignées.
Aligned, yes. When the planets are aligned, yeah.
Yes, he can win the Tour de France next year or the future. And if he don't want, it was not his destined.
Exactly. We'll leave it at that.
It's not a problem.
We'll leave it at that. Johan, je vous souhaite une très belle retraite.
Et, merci.
C'est bien mérité. Et félicitations d'une très belle carrière. Et bonne chance pour le futur.
Thank you.
So the wonderful Johan Bagot, what a nice guy he is. And as I say, Bike and Connect is his commercial venture now. And on the show notes, we will put a little link to his website. But he was imploring me, when I asked him the big question about whether or not God exists, to look at the first chapter of Stephen Hawking's last book that he wrote, Brief Answers to Big Questions, in which Hawking reaches the conclusion that there is no role for God in the universe. And the reason I think the reason he comes to that conclusion is based on quantum mechanics, which explains how subatomic particles behave in quantum studies. So you can see subatomic particles like protons and electrons seemingly appearing out of nowhere, and they stick around for a while and then they disappear again to a completely different location. And that is how the Big Bang is explained. He also talks about, in terms of the Big Bang, and now we kind of understand that it happened empirically. The evidence says that the universe simply popped into existence. It became out of nowhere. And before the Big Bang, there was no time. So therefore, without time, the possibility of a creator outside of time is logically inconsistent. So Stephen Hawking, I'm afraid, he reached the conclusion that there is no God and we are in a godless universe. What do you think about that, David?
Well, I think we all have our own gods, don't we? Or God.
I think that's correct.
And I think you choose what you believe in, and perhaps for Stephen Hawking and for many, their God is quantum mechanics. So, you know, you choose what you want to believe in and you find sense in that, or in the case of quantum mechanics, you never find sense. But I think I'd rather believe in something, even if it's, I'm not necessarily a religious person, I respect religion, but I also respect quantum mechanics, and neither of them I truly understand. But I'd like to think there is a purpose to everything.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think it's a rather a destructive conclusion to reach in some ways, and that the God resides within, doesn't it, really? Anyway, what a nice guy Johan Bagul was. Terrific to talk to. And it is funny, isn't it, how we've stumbled across all these little connections.
I know.
It's just remarkable.
I think it's just there below the surface. I think people do think about it a lot more than perhaps they admit, and it's starting to, everyone's being a bit more empowered. What is brilliant, as you said, with regards to Bagul, is this new generation of French writers who are, dare I say, they're quite intellectual, they're well-educated, the cycling career almost feels like they go into it knowing it's going to be only a part of their lives. And whereas... Yeah. A mere 20, 30 years ago, French professional cyclists were working class and almost looked down upon within society. And yet in the past 20 years, 30 years, we've seen this huge cultural shift in French cycling. And Bagul's a prime example of that.
Yeah, absolutely, David. And it was really nice to hear the genuine warmth that he has got towards Thibaut Pinot, who's a rider he knows very well, obviously, and how much faith that Bagul and the rest of the French cycling community have in Pinot actually, you know, getting over the line and coming back after that huge disappointment this year and actually challenging properly for the Tour de France. Having said that, and we don't know what's going to happen yet in the end of Milano-Torino, let alone Lombardia, but David, I have, you know, I won a bit of money online when I backed Pogacar to get on the podium at the Vuelta. You remember that? I was quite pleased with myself.
Unprecedented, Ned. It was amazing. You actually managed to predict something.
I picked a winner of sorts. But I have taken my winnings and I've stuck them all on an outright winner for the Tour de France for next year, a certain Primoz Roglic. And I got six to one. And I'm pretty pleased with that.
Whoa, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Huh. Because he's got to be
all... on winning. I mean, I'm not saying it's not one of your craziest bets, but it's definitely good odds. It's definitely
quite
good odds,
aren't they? I mean, we don't know obviously yet which race he's going to go to, but surely now it's the Tour de France, isn't it? And you know, Dumoulin might be there as well. And
I just thought there's the caveat.
What?
We don't actually know if he's going to go to the Tour de France.
Well, hence, I think that's the reason why he's 6-1, because we've no idea whether he's going to turn up at the start line.
It's
what's
that.
Called an anti-post bet, but there we go, anyway.
Details. Just as Dumoulin. If you made that bet in the last couple of days, also it's just at the point where Dumoulin's announcing that he's focusing on the Tour de France and the Olympics next year.
He said that. But the problem is, I think they might... I think you've talked about it in the past, David. You said, ooh, Jumbo-Visma are going to try and out Ineos, right?
Yeah,
And the way you do that... Ineos are going to turn up with 7 Grand Tour winners, aren't they, in their 8-man lineup. And I think Jumbo-Visma might try and do the same. It's going to be like they're going to kind of like outgun each other. And I think Roglic and Dumoulin will both be at the Tour de France. And if that's the case... I think Roglic is a stronger proposition than Tom Dumoulin to win the race. There you go.
Well, brilliant. Go for it.
Thrown my money away, haven't I?
Well, we'll see. Very good.
Okay. I'm glad you've got yourself a Eurosport subscription now. And you can
I'm watching. I'm watching right now. I'm watching the break.
What's happening?
37Ks to go.
37Ks to go.
37Ks to go. The break is rotating well. Got a UAE guy here. As you said, it is one of the fastest classics. Cause let's not forget about Milan-Turin as well. This finish is relatively new, because in the old days, the Milan-Turin had a very unique finish to it. Do you know what that was, Ned?
It finished in a velodrome.
Yeah, so it was only Paris-Roubaix and Milan-Turin of the modern classics finished in the velodrome, whereas back in the day, that used to be quite a common occurrence because there were just so many velodromes everywhere.
But get in. I'm so pleased. I'm so pleased I got that right, because I said that to Rendell the other day, and he didn't know that, and he doubted me, and I suddenly, therefore, I doubted myself. But it finished... I can't remember the name of the velodrome, but it's all tumbled down and falling apart now. Anyway.
It's a velodrome, Humbert. Humbert. What
is
a great name.
Okay.
Yeah, King Humbert the First of the Savoy. Okay. But yeah. But what was interesting about it is you'd come over, you would have a big punchy climb before. That would be very fast all day, punchy climb. Then you drop down and finish in the velodrome. And I did that in, I think, 2003, and it was the only time I did the race. And I didn't really have much velodrome experience doing a sprint, but you come down with generally a bunch of climbers or classics riders who had no idea how to do a sprint on a velodrome, and it turned into an absolute comedy of errors. Yeah, so that's what Milan-Turin used to be, quite unique.
But that's the amazing thing. Now. David, that's the amazing thing about Gilbert, isn't it? That he had never, up until when he won Paris-Roubaix this year, he had never sprinted on a track before. Never, not once.
It's amazing. But that just goes to show. That's what a true champion, isn't it? They're just adaptable to those situations. So, yeah.
All right.
But yeah, okay.
I shall speak to you anon, David.
Anon, Ned.
And after this little bit of music, I'll tell you, in a shouty fashion, who the winner of Milan-Torino is. They're well into the barrier section. The finishing line is within touching distance. Just 200 metres to go for Michael Woods now. Goddu is beaten. And in the eighth Woods round, he's going to have to settle for a podium place here. Just for no time to do anything. Bernard relegated at the moment to fifth place on the road. And Michael Woods has beaten Alejandro Valverde. Although one last push from the Spaniard. Valverde now trying to get onto the wheel of Michael Woods as Adam Yates rounds the final corner. Valverde is now there. And he's on his wheel, but he's left it too late. And Michael Woods takes the win. Valverde in second place and Adam Yates crossing the line, disappointed in third.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.